Good morning. Wherever you may be, I know you are here in consciousness, so I hope your morning is going as beautifully as mine. Here in the Appalachian Mountains, the leaves are beginning to change colors. We're having our first cool evenings. And we're leaving summer behind, which is all right by me. I like fall, I like autumn. I like to have, well, to smell the chimney and fireplace smells as I walk around the neighborhood coming out the chimneys, and I like the color on the leaves and the coolness in the air, and I just, I really enjoy it. So, but we know that all of that is a mental illusion, right? And what does Joel say? You're perfectly free to enjoy it so long as you understand what's real. So I'm perfectly free to walk around this mountain, enjoy the scenery, but I don't love it so much that I have to have it. I understand that behind this is the invisible omnipresence. And that's where my heart is. That's where my soul, my mind is. On and in that invisible presence as I'm walking around smelling and seeing these colors and these smells. And it is possible to have both because I do it. Now, I don't know how it works down the road because there's no one here to tell me. I just have the writings and what I can glean from them. So I do not know if looking and viewing this behind this visible picture into the invisible, if there'll ever come a time when you only see the kingdom of heaven. I don't think that will happen here on Earth. I think as long as I'm here on Earth, I'm going to see both this world and the kingdom. Now, if my consciousness is in the kingdom, this world, of course, I can't love, hate, or fear it, can I? Because I know it's sort of like a cartoon, and I don't take any of it too seriously. Well, that is most of the time. Of course, if someone that you love becomes ill and you can't help them, that feels a little frustrating and you feel a little powerless until you remember, wake up, wake up. You've got to go back to seeing that only the invisible is here and this is just a cartoon. One of our children really enjoys watching anime. The Japanese version of what I say are cartoons, and she's quick to correct me, no, that's anime. So, if you want to be modern, and you're younger, you might say this world is anime, and the invisible kingdom is real. So, I brought all that up because as I walk through the woods, and I see these sights, and smell these smells, and feel the cool wind on my face, I enjoy it. But I know right here where I'm walking is the invisible kingdom, and I live and move and have my being in the conscious remembrance of that, even while walking in the woods. Okay, does that make sense? Alright, now, this week we're looking at Chapter 9, The Temple Not Made with Hands. And we did this before, I know, because it's underlined. And I searched around being fairly lazy. I searched around and I thought, well, I could just find the old one and put it up and I wouldn't have to do this again, but I couldn't find it, so I guess we'll go through this again. It is called The Temple Not Made with Hands, and if you've been listening in the last few months or last year or two, it suddenly occurred to me and I began saying that I don't want to live in a temple made by mind, which is the temple made by hands, which is everything you see, hear, taste, touch, and smell. Now, I want to live in a temple not made by hands, and that is a temple made by consciousness, God consciousness, Christ consciousness. Now, that Christ consciousness, as it forms itself, still appears out here in something made by hands. That's the way that the mind interprets it, and as long as the human mind is here, I'm going to be seeing its interpretations, even of a temple not made with hands. What does that mean? Well, once Joel realized that I am supply, and supply is not what I get, but what I pour out, he began to pour. And it increased, it multiplied. It multiplied to the point where I think he was giving away 85% of his income. He was tithing 85% and keeping 15%. And still lived an abundant life in Hawaii. So, his recognition that wherever I am is supply, because I and supply are one, allowed him to pour out 85% and still have an abundant life. It appeared as form, because the mind interprets and translates that inner realization into form. First you see it, you see the invisible principle. Oh, I am supply. And you see it. You have an inner realization. He had it as he was broke. He had a dime in his pocket. And that's all he had. He had been sending out bills to people because they asked him to meditate for them. And I guess in the Christian Science, maybe that was how they did it. So he did it too. He was sending out bills. And nobody was paying. Thanks, Joel. I feel better. Thanks, Joel. But they weren't paying. And he had a dime in his pocket. He couldn't even afford to take a bus or a cab. So he walked from his office to his home. And on the way, what is wrong here? He contemplated as he was walking with eyes open. And it came to him. Oh, I am supply. You remember that? I must have had a similar realization, because for the last 45 years or more, I've not had a problem with supply. Oh, yes, yes, like anybody else, if I quit a job or get laid off, there's a period where I don't have anything coming in, and so nothing to go out, but that's just the picture. And it doesn't stay so long that I'm totally bankrupt or out on the streets. The picture changes as I remember the same principle. And the point I'm making here is that the temple not made with hands is what you first see in your consciousness. That is consciousness formed as a principle, and you see it. I am supply. It's an inner... Oh, okay. You feel it. You see it with your inner eye, with your inner being. And you relax and rest back in that principle, in that realization. And it's enough. You don't have to do anything else. You don't have to outline. You don't have to draw pictures. You don't have to beg or plead or try to channel or force it out here. No, that's enough. Right there is enough. And then in the days or weeks to follow, it appears. It forms itself. The mind forms it. Your realization, interpreted through the mind, becomes form. It becomes a temple made by hands. That is, somebody concrete offering you a job, or in one way or another, supply begins to flow to you and hopefully through you out here. And you begin paying bills, and you begin giving and tithing and sharing, and it's pouring through you. All right? But first, you live in that temple, not made with hands, in the conscious realization, and then you rest in it. You don't have to concern yourself with the temple made with hands. That's automatic. So, this chapter is called The Temple Not Made with Hands, and so you already know that it must have something to do with an invisible principle. And so he begins. There is within every person the Christ self, the real self, the I. On the spiritual path, the goal is the attaining of conscious union with that self. Realization of the Christ as our identity. And this requires a dying daily to the human part of us. Now, that right there is a lot. You could take that sentence we just read, or those two sentences, and or three sentences, and you could meditate on them for a year, because there's so much in them. The goal is attaining conscious union with that inner I, that infinite, eternal, immortal, incorporeal, invisible, spiritual I at the center of your being. And consciously communing with it, consciously, that means you have the inner awareness of the temple not made with hands. But that won't happen unless there's a dying daily. Why? Because we come to the infinite way and we have problems and we want to apply these principles so we can increase our income or find the right companion or heal a disease, a dis-ease. And that's okay. That's what drew everybody to the master, if you read the story. But then, once you became a disciple, he was a little upset if you were still looking for that. You know? What? You're still looking for the loaves and fishes? I showed you a principle. And so, sooner or later, you have to give that up and die daily to that human that wants all these things, even if you haven't achieved them. Even if you're still suffering, you have to give that up. You might turn it over to someone else, or turn it over to a practitioner, or call the Infinite Way and have one of them meditate for you. You might do something to turn it over. Maybe call Bob Harper up there in Chicago. But give it to someone else to work on, so you can get back to your meditation where you're trying to commune, or finding a way to commune with that inner I. Because even if you do receive a healing, and even if you do receive a really wonderful companion, and even if you do double or triple your income next week or next year or next month, you'll have problems again. If you find that inner I, you may have problems again, but you'll also have the answer. You'll be living in the answer, and so they won't be problems that drag out and go on and on and on. They'll be quickly met, okay? So, he says, if we can put off that human self with its belief in good and evil and awaken to our true identity, then we are through with patchwork. Oh, here it is right here. Through with demonstrating some good today and wondering what we will have to meet next year. Within each of us is the perfect self. It has never fallen, has never left heaven, and therefore can never gain heaven. It is already a state of heaven. That perfect self is a state of heaven, which tells you right there it's a state of consciousness. That perfect self that you are, the I of you, which existed before the mind formed this you out here, and will exist after this form of you out here is gone, and exists right now, that I of you is a state of heaven, a state of consciousness. It's a inner realization, a temple not made with hands. He says it can never be ascended. It already is perfect. It's called the hidden manna, pearl of great price, the robe of immortality. And I like that word robe, because you're clothed in that consciousness when it comes upon you. So the Son of God is you. It is I. Actually, it is our one self. And we do not patch it up. We do not demonstrate for it. We do not heal it. We cannot even make progress with it. We can, however, bring to light in our experience this perfected self, our Christ self. Well, now that's pretty, well, that's quite wonderful, actually, because he's saying, stop working on this form, this mind creation. Put your energy, your effort, your awareness, your inner realization toward having the experience of the one inner I, because that's the answer. When you bring to light or have the great experience of that inner self in which you are released, you know, there's that feeling in your chest. Ah, thank you, Father. It really is real. I am. That's the answer to everything. Living and moving and having your being in that, every need is met out here. Every need. Unto eternity, says Jesus Christ, it'll spring up everlasting. So, in order to accomplish this, we do not go into meditation with the idea of meeting an outside problem. Our goal now, our spiritual goal, is not developing a self that has no problems, but dying to the self that has them, and being reborn to our already perfect self. Yes. How do you do that? How do you die? A little bit every day. Because it's in dying to this outer this temple made by hands, temple made by mind. It's in dying to this and identifying with this, pulling up within, lifting up this I, communing with it, feeling it, having the conscious awareness of it, and standing stock still in it, watching it. That's how we die to this out here. And I wrote here in the margin, with every realization, a little bit of self dies. And I wrote, yes, I discovered this for the first time as an experience when I recognized the fact as a teenager, because I first started reading The Art of Meditation when I was 17, and I had fear in me, a fear of living, a fear of life, a fear of having to go out there and provide for my own needs and all that. And this is when I was in high school. And one of the things that happened was, as I began to look to this inner voice, as I began to look to God within to direct me, in all thy ways acknowledge him and he will direct thy paths, as I began to practice thy will be done every day. And I will agree, at first it was an affirmation, but as I began to practice it and my thoughts turned away from having to provide for myself to the fact that thy grace is my sufficiency, thy grace, I began to come into the experience that this fear left. I was no longer afraid, because my life began to fall into place as I stepped aside and became a beholder. And these principles began to become real. Living as a beholder, something else was living my life for me. And fear began to leave. And I discovered when the fear left, there was not less of me. There was more. I thought, you know, when this, if this fear and these resentments were taken away, there would be less of me. But it didn't work that way. When they were removed, more of the real I, the real me, that I, flowed out. And so by dying, there was more of me, not less. And I think sometimes we're afraid of that dying daily. But I'm here to tell you, the more you die, the more you live. And that it's really true. He who loses his life will find an everlasting life. So he says, when we go into meditation, we cannot take into it any thought about the problem. If we have children and we want to be of any help to them, let us realize now that we have to dismiss them from thought. Well, I don't know if you've ever had servants or maids and you dismiss them. Go on home. You dismiss them. They're gone. Get out of here. Go on. And it may be in a good way. Maybe it's the day before Christmas and you're giving them the day off. Go on. You're dismissing them. But they're gone, aren't they? And when we sit down into meditation, it's impossible. Let me tell you this. It is impossible for invisible, incorporeal, spiritual God to create something material. You cannot pull God into the human life. And so that's why so many prayers are unanswered, because we're praying to an incorporeal being to manifest corporeally. And as Joel says, it cannot be done. To try it is to tear yourself to bits. At least to get very, very frustrated. That's why we cannot sit down and bring the problem or the person into meditation. Because then you're going to try to channel or funnel God into that human form, human life. You can't pull the temple not made by hands into a temple made by hands. You can't do it. So we sit down in a meditation and we dismiss all that. Whatever the problem is, no answer to that. We dismiss it. Go away. Now, why am I here? I'm here to commune with that inner I. I don't know how to do that. Well, Joel says I should start with contemplation then. And he says I should start with the word God. Of course, you can start with the word I, or you can start with the word is, or whatever it is that you're comfortable with. But start with something that has, something that means this inner spiritual presence. And then contemplate that. I in the midst of me am mighty. I in the midst of you am mighty. I in the midst of all me's, I am that. In fact, I am that I am. And I will never leave me nor forsake me. And I have come that I might have life and life more abundantly. And I need to not live, but be still and let I live. Yes, I live, yet not I live. I live, the inner I. It's in all the planets. That I is throughout all the galaxies, and if there be multiple universes, that I is in all of them, and then even beyond them. And so I'm here to stand still and behold that I as it forms itself as my awareness, as my consciousness. Let me be still. Let me behold this I forming invisibly as an invisible spiritual substance, as an infinite eternal I. And I wait a minute or two, as Joel has instructed us. Not every time do I feel it, but sometimes I feel that inner movement of that I. Now it's real. It's not something I just read in a book, or something I voiced, or something I thought. It's on a different level. It's on a spiritual level. It's moving itself. I have no control. But I can rest, I can be still, I can behold, I can feel that presence. And it says, "It is I, be not afraid." And so that's the goal. And then if I feel it, I rest in it until it diminishes and moves in the background. Well, I'm feeling it now, so I'll be still. I don't know if you watch much television. Now they're flat screen TVs. But if you do, maybe you've seen that commercial for Allstate. You're in good hands with Allstate. That's the way it feels when you feel that presence and you rest back in it. I am in good hands. I'm in the everlasting arms, really. I am in good hands with Spirit, with Christ. And you know the names aren't important. Father, God, Christ, I. They're just words. None of them have any meaning, really, that you don't give them. But the experience, the awareness, that's everything. Everything. Because once you've had the awareness, be assured. It's been formed in your consciousness. You're aware of a presence. You're aware of spiritual form. Spiritual substance. You don't direct it or push it or channel it or funnel it. You just get up and go about your business, and the next thing you know, it's formed, the mind forms it out here in some form of harmony. So there is no individual such as I am seeing in my mind's eye. There is no such self. He's having a meditation here. There is no such person. He about whom I am thinking is not the image and likeness of God. That is not God created. That is the false sense of self. The real truth is that God created this individual in his image and likeness as pure spiritual being. So what he's doing here, you can see clearly, is he is dismissing the picture out here. He's dismissing the forms appearing, the appearance, so that he can settle down into the conscious awareness of an inner I, an inner presence. And as we follow along with him, he says, "Son, all that I have is thine, not a little bit. God cannot be divided and a tiny bit of it put in this person. All the nature of God is expressed as this individual. All the nature of God, all the spiritual nature, all the incorporeal nature, all the eternal and immortal nature of God is now appearing. And my function then is to get acquainted with this person as he really is. So let me forget the picture, and let me commune with the offspring of God, and come to know him." What I am seeking now is that God reveal to me the nature and the name of this individual. Reveal to me the true identity. You see that? So he starts with this meditation, and he has to dismiss the picture in order to come into the conscious awareness of incorporeal spiritual being, which is called lifting up the Son of God. Now, you can't use these words and repeat them in your meditation and say, well, now I've done it. Because that's not doing it. Doing it is when you really, within yourself, do dismiss the picture. It's gone. Right now, temporarily, it's gone. And you're at a place of stillness, of silence. Through your contemplation, you've arrived there where you've basically said, now, Father, reveal the incorporeal spiritual being, the one infinite being, that which you created in the beginning and forever and ever. And in the silence, in true silence, in the absence of entertaining any of these pictures, in that silence, you will feel its movement. If you've learned how to meditate, you will come into a conscious awareness of an incorporeal spiritual being. You'll feel it. Yes, thank you. And that is lifting up the Son of God. He says, we have taken none of the person's problems into our thought. We have no thought of the person. All that we are tabernacling with is the image and likeness of God. We do not know what that spiritual offspring is, but in our meditation, we are asking God to reveal His nature to us, His true identity. All right, so what are we doing? We're dismissing the temples made by hands so that we can come within here and have real prayer. We can experience a conscious communion, conscious union with the temple not made with hands. He says our meditation can be for a husband, wife, mother, or father, a neighbor next door, or a neighbor across the ocean. We can begin with our friends, then we can go on to our enemies. But in each case, we are not going into meditation to change one of the forms out here, called humanhood. We're not going into meditation to change evil into good, or sick into well, or poor into rich. In each case, we are meditating so as to get acquainted with our neighbor, the neighbor we are supposed to love and whom, in the human picture, we find it impossible to love. Yes, what we're doing is we're getting acquainted with that invisible neighbor. We talked last week about praying for our enemies. If you're doing it correctly, when you sit down, you're dismissing your enemy so that you can come into the conscious awareness and commune with the invisible, incorporeal being that stands right there where the enemy appears. And if you can't do that, then you need to do a little contemplation so that you can dismiss that enemy picture and stand still long enough to see or to allow God to reveal the incorporeal spiritual nature of Him. Because that incorporeal spiritual nature of Him is the I of you. It is time to wake up and realize that your humanhood is no more the manifestation and completeness of what you really are spiritually than night is like day. You do not know the nature of your true being, or his true being, or her true being, or their true being. You have to go beyond humanhood. You have to go beyond the best humanhood that has ever been known. You have to be able to blot out of your thought your most loving qualities, your most generous qualities, friendliest qualities, All these must go in order that you can say, ah, but what is spiritual identity? What is spiritual selfhood? You must pierce the veil of illusion that separates you from the realization of your immortal self, your Christ self, your real identity, which has no qualities of good and no qualities of bad. Now, that's hard to do, because this entire world, according to what I've been watching for 62 years, is made up of trying to change evil into good. I'm trying to get rid of this lady here so I can find the right lady. I'm trying to go to college and get a good education and so that I can get a good job and I can get rid of this barely above poverty level that I'm living and get a nice home and a nice car and I can get all these good things. I'm trying to exercise and take supplements and vitamins and whatever else I need so that my health will improve, so that I'm no longer a couch potato, but I'm becoming healthy. You see, we're all trying to change the evil into good, and like we've said so many times before, it's just like the guy or the gal that's on stage and spinning those plates on poles, and you get this one going, and that one starts to wobble, and you run back there to get that one, and the other one starts to wobble, and you run over there, and then two on this side crash to the floor and break into pieces, and you try to... And that's what it is. And if you examine lives that go on, or maybe your own life, you'll see, wow, that's what I've done my entire life. I wasted. I thought that's what life was all about. Get ahead. Succeed. Become wealthy. I thought that's what it was all about. Oh yes, and along the way, do some nice things, some charitable things. Once you become wealthy, you can be a much more philanthropic. You can give to that donation, that foundation, and this foundation, and that charitable organization, and this spiritual movement. Oh, you can just pour out. Isn't that wonderful? And it is. It's good to practice that principle. But we're only missing one thing, and that's Christ. That's all we're missing is Christ. Go through our whole life and maybe we're a very good person, giving to all sorts of places. But we don't have Christ, do we? That's all we missed, was our true identity. I've been watching, I've been a baseball fan somewhat since I grew up in Los Angeles, and I like the Dodgers. They're about to go into the playoffs for the fourth straight year. They're a pretty neat team because usually they're, they were known as blue-collar workers when they were in Brooklyn. And they usually rise above being average to win. And so I like to see the struggle and see them overcome the struggle and all that. But anyway, that's just something fun I do. And the announcer for the Dodgers is a man named... Vince Scully, but everybody calls him Vin Scully. He's been announcing for the Dodgers for 67 years. That's over two careers, isn't it? It's amazing, 67 years. But what makes him so amazing is if you look at him and you really come to know him by watching him over several years, he's a gentleman, an honest-to-God gentleman. He's nice, he's giving, he's loving, he tells the most incredible stories, he's somewhat patriotic, I believe he's Irish Catholic. Anyway, he's just a nice man, a nice human being. Everybody that knows him loves him. And I look at him and I think, wow, I'm not that nice. You know, I'm not. This guy is, oh man, but you know what, there's only one thing he doesn't know, and I know he doesn't know, well, I don't know, but I'm pretty certain. And that is this Christ, this invisible, incorporeal, eternal spiritual substance, this temple not made with hands. I'm not saying he may not have had a glimpse over those 89 years of his, but I'm saying he's not walking in it. And so why am I bringing him up? Because this is an example that comes to my mind when I think, when I read here, you have to go beyond being good. You have to let go of all your goodness too. Your most loving qualities, your most generous qualities, your friendliest qualities, all these must go in order to realize spiritual selfhood. They have to go, all of them. Why? Because there's still a person there in the way. Yes, this man is very loving, very generous. He's wonderful. Everything, the most good a human can be. But where is that invisible spiritual identity? Is it living? Is he aware of it? I don't think so. I don't know, so I can't say for sure. I've never talked to him, but maybe that's why he's so loving. I don't know, but I know he's Irish Catholic and he goes to Mass all the time, and I think he's a very wonderful human being. Okay? And I only bring it up because we have to go beyond being a very wonderful human being. That has to die too. It doesn't mean we'll stop being nice. It means that it won't be us anymore. Us the human. Alright? So please don't think I'm judging that man. I'm not. I really like him. He's wonderful. But I'm bringing it up as an example to say, if that's all he is, or all you are, or all I am, it has to die. You have to die to all of your humanhood. Alright, so, if I go into meditation, he says, thinking of myself, or of a human being whom I would like to heal, enrich, or make happy, then I'm back in metaphysics. And probably even in the psychological or psychiatric world that has as its goal improving a human being. But if I am on the spiritual path, I go within and I drop that human self. See? Good or bad. I refuse to make any attempt to improve it, heal it, correct it. I ignore the appearances and abide in this I. And that's the whole secret to the temple not made with hands. You dismiss it. You drop it. No answer to this. If I'm very generous and loving and giving and I have built up wealth over these years and I'm sharing and I'm very philanthropic and I'm giving to that foundation and this one and I'm treating my grandchildren very good and all that, my wife and my kids, my great-grandchildren, if I'm doing all that, that's not enough. We have to go beyond the righteousness of those human people. So, in order to come into the conscious union with that inner eye, all of that, good or bad, has to... Yes, and that's the other side. If you've been bad, if you've been, like I was once upon a time, running the streets and stealing and getting into mischief and trouble and... if you've been hurtful and mean and critical and judgmental, and if you've been miserly and you've been, you know, think of the worst that a human being can be. That too has to be dismissed. You can't hang on to either side of that temple made by mind. Mind formed as human life. Can't hang on to either side. You have to dismiss both. Whether you're sitting down to meditate to help that miserly person become more giving, or whether you're sitting down in meditation to help that wonderful person get over a disease, You have to dismiss both. If you're ever going to see and feel and know him aright. Him whom to know aright is life eternal. The I that I am lives by grace. I already have. I already am the resurrection. I am the ascended one. I am the perfect one by virtue of my oneness with the Father. I already am clothed with immortality. I already am eternal being. My oneness, that original relationship given me in the beginning, this establishes me in heaven. This I was never born. This I will never die. It already has an immortal and eternal existence. Now, that when you have that inner awareness and commune with that inner spiritual I, and you rest in it, and it's very real as an experience, you can know that was never born. That will never die. And learning to live in that, when you live in that consciously, on a consistent basis, what then becomes of you? You are never born. You will never die. You have found your life eternal. So, he says, throughout this meditation, I have let the other I with its problems die. I have let it drop out of my consciousness. And if I persist in this, one day it will not come back again. It will not intrude into my mind. This may help you understand the Master when he speaks out from the I. Okay? Now, you remember we had that meditation that Joel gave where you go from your toes to your head. Am I in this or is that mine? Am I in those legs or are those mine? Am I in this stomach or is that mine? Am I in this head or is that mine? You remember? And then the second part where you go through your life, which came to me, remember when I'm 5 years old, am I that? Or was that just a mental image? I look at 12 years old, 24, 35, 42, 64. Am I that? Am I that? Well, that's all a way of dying to the temple made by hands, by mind, so that we may stand still, step out of it, come into the conscious awareness of a temple made by consciousness. Temple made without hands. And we're going to study. As I was typing out the Orlando Herbfitch Orlando Divine Life series, it fits so well with this that we're studying that it seemed that that's what we're going to do next. We're going to go through those 40 days in the wilderness, so that we can, at the end or somewhere in the middle, so by the time we get to the end, have a conscious awareness of our own divine life, this internal I. And so that's what we're going to do after this study, because they fit so well together, and I'm going to do it with you. All right, now, it says, you will now see him as ascended. You'll see Christ Jesus ascended before the crucifixion, ascended in consciousness. Yes, we thought ascension, I thought when I first started on the spiritual path, ascension was some, I don't know what I thought it was, ascending up somewhere in the clouds, I don't know. We had heaven up there, didn't we? Now, ascension is every time you go into your meditation and you ascend up over the temple made by mind and stand or rest, rather, in those everlasting arms. You have ascended up over the mind. Well, that's what Joel says in the Beyond Words and Thoughts, Truth Unveiled. The ascension is always the same, rising above the mind. It's all coming together, isn't it? And Christ Jesus ascended. He said, and now I am no longer in the world. So he ascended up there into that consciousness permanently before the crucifixion, which is why they couldn't touch him. What did they crucify? They crucified a temple made by mind, and he wasn't in it. Hello, I'm still here. I'm over here in the invisible. It must have been really something to crucify something that was already dead. Because if he wasn't in it, it was only a mental image. I used to wonder about that. I'm seeing it more and more clearly. He wasn't in it. They crucified a body made by mind. It had no life in it. He was standing in the invisible. He was already ascended. That's why he could come, go in and come out, lay it down in his body and pick it up again. All right, so that's what we're going to learn to do, if not now, later. And so he writes here, now he's ascended. Now he is looking out from up there. Not a man with problems, not a man with a future. Now he is just the image and likeness of God, saying, thou seest me, thou seest the Father, for I and the Father are one. That other self has dropped away. His spiritual self is shining through. All right? So, we're almost out of time. I'm going to have to read a little faster or something. All right, so God is bidding every individual on the face of the earth to awaken to his true identity. Awake, thou that sleepest. Christhood is our true identity. Not good humanhood. Not even when it's wonderful, like the man I told you about. But not bad humanhood either. Not when it's horrible, like some people that we've all known. No, both of those are temples made by mind, and you can go on forever trying to get the bad one into a good one. You can do this lifetime after lifetime. And we have. We all have. I have and you have. But sooner or later you must be willing to put off this I that is full of error, full of resentments, and declare within yourself, I am ready to assume my true identity. I am ready to awaken to the light of my own being. I am willing to accept the master statement to call no man on earth my father, but to acknowledge divine sonship for myself. All right, so he says here, you are not supposed to love the human self, because even when your human self is good, it's not very good. Or any other human self, I wrote, because that pulls you into the world mind. No, he says, it is not your human self that you are here to love. You must love only God and his universe, his world, his creation. Okay, folks, here it is. You must love only the temple made without hands, only the invisible, spiritual, incorporeal presence. You can enjoy all these forms, but don't love them. Love the invisible, incorporeal, spiritual presence that permeates them when you come into the awareness of it. Now, does that mean... Well, let me tell you this. Yes, does that mean that we don't love... that I don't love my wife? No, of course I love her. Does that mean you don't love your husband? No, of course you do. We don't love our kids? No, of course we do. But it's not the mind forms that we're loving. We're loving the reality. I love the reality of my wife. My second spiritual experience ever, when I was just 19 or 20 or 21 or 2. No, that's right, I was 19. I came to see that invisible presence is inside of everyone and everything. I had three rapid spiritual experiences, profound, some lasting for days and days, in which I saw and felt that presence inside of everyone and everything, and so I fell in love with it. I love it with all my heart, mind, and soul. If you could see inside of me, you would see that's true. And so I fell in love with it. I know it's inside of everyone and everything. And that's what I love about my wife. As I see it, as I recognize it, my conscious recognition of that inside of her draws it forth. It draws it forth. As I see that, as I walk around the universe, complete strangers act in a loving way towards me. Because if I be lifted up, will draw that out. You see? And so, no, of course we still love them. And I love that presence by loving her. And I love that presence by loving you. Because I know who you are. I know who you are. Now, he says, you will begin to look around at this world and you will realize I have been judging after appearances, the very thing that threw us out of the Garden of Eden. I have been clinging to the very barrier to heaven. Now, let me judge righteous judgment, the knowledge of true identity. It is not righteous judgment to see a person of 30 and say, oh, how youthful you are, and then look at another one of 60 and say, oh, you're getting old. This is not righteous judgment. Righteous judgment is to be able to look at the young and the old and see Christ, see immortality, see eternality, spiritual perfection. Yes. We are judging by appearances. If we look at the appearance and say, well, that one's a very wonderful person, but that one is quite miserly and quite critical and quite mean. That's a mean person. We are judging righteous judgment when we look through that. We dismiss that, and we come into the conscious awareness of an invisible, incorporeal Christ. Then, I'm communing with that, and I'm judging righteous judgment. Now, what we are dealing with is truth. The only truth there is the truth about your identity and my identity. When you begin to know yourself as I, that I am, the I that is one with God, the I that has meat the world knows not of, the I that has meat, wine, and water, the I that is life eternal, then you begin to live a new life. I am come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly. Yeah. Your new life is as an expression of consciousness, not an expression of mind. We're going to run over because I want to complete this, and I still have a few things to say. Now, in 1980, one night I was by myself and I was meditating on this I am that I am, and suddenly it came to me, oh my God, I am that I am. You know the I am we're always talking about? I am that I am. And I recognize that I am that itself. I am the very I am. I am that I am. And it was somewhat shocking, and I called Herb up. All I remember is him saying, I was wondering when you were going to realize this or something to that effect. He, you know, when you have a spiritual teacher, you can share your pearls that come to you in your meditation, as I have shared with some of you out of the journal. And he'll handle them, or she'll handle them gently and hand them back and recognize their value. If you hand these same pearls to someone just because you can't remain silent and you blurt them out to friends or relatives that don't understand this, they'll trample them under feet. They won't handle them very nicely. So, from the moment of your recognition of this, your life changes. You are no longer seeking God. You now know God, this I within you. And you live in the consciousness of the presence of that I within you. You commune with that I. Yes, you're no longer seeking God because you know where God is. Now you seek to spend time with it. You seek to spend time with I, to commune with I. So he says, drop humanhood and realize I. When you turn to your child, your grandchild, your husband, your wife, your neighbor, or your enemy, you know that the I that is within each of them has come that they may be lifted up above the good, all the good that the earth has. Yes, you're lifted up above all the good that the earth has into a temple not made with hands, into a consciousness not made with hands, into a life not made with hands, in, even into a body not made with hands. All this is the function of the I within you. So leave their humanhood alone. Go inside and realize, I in the midst of me am mighty. I in the midst of him, her, I in the midst of them am mighty. That I is the secret of life. That I has come so that the whole human race may be lifted up into a temple not made with hands. And so we have it on good authority, and particularly if you listen to Herb Fitch and what poured through him, that we have another body. And that at first we have glimpses within ourselves that there really is this I. There really is an invisible presence, because I feel that presence not made with mind, presence made by spirit, by consciousness, by I. And we drop this out here and we commune with it. But remember, Joel says there comes a very specific point in your experience where you drop this, you dismiss this out here, and it doesn't come back anymore. And Herb says, you learn to move, to walk in your incorporeal body. And Paul says, we have a mortal, material body and a spiritual body, a temple not made with hands. And we must learn to walk in it. And Jesus Christ says, I've learned to lay that down and pick it up again, because I'm standing in my incorporeal spiritual body. And you have one too. How many is there? One. All right, so it's a consciousness that does not have degrees of good or degrees of evil. It has only infinite immortality, infinite eternality. In all these meditations, we have ignored the personal sense of I that has problems and wants to get rid of them. And we have brought to light the I that we really are, the one that was never born. Just think, feel it. That invisible, spiritual, incorporeal presence that you feel, that I, is you. That's the I that was never born. Stand in it now and feel your immaculate self. Red seas open before that I. Manna falls from the sky. Why? Because I lives by grace, not by might, not by power, but by grace without any human effort. Everything appears in its order. And what a wonderful thing that is, to begin to live. Maybe not all the time, but have periods where you see it just falling into place all by itself. This I is living itself, and you're a beholder. In meditation, we must always remember that we are the temple not made with hands. You are that I. I am that I am. That enables us to shut the physical body out and go right through any appearance to the I at the center of our being. Now, the goal then is not to have a healing. The goal is to be lifted up into that I, where you can commune with it, where you commune with yourself. And then, what a glorious experience when the human just totally drops away for a moment, and there's nothing but I. And it fills your body, it fills the room, it fills the house, it fills the universe. I am that. Now, when you do that, then good and evil both drop away, because they're both temples made by mind. I remember when I called Herb because my wife had an ovarian cyst, and it was about the size of a tennis ball. You could put your hand on it and feel it, on the outside of her and feel it. And we called Herb, and Herb said to me, I want you to work on it too. And we worked on it, and within 3 days, it disappeared. I mean, it disappeared. It was gone. Put your hand there, and it's flat. And the doctors were so concerned when we had been to them, they had said, we need to operate tomorrow. And the only reason we didn't go into the hospital was because the anesthesiologist said, how much money do you have? And we said, we don't have any, but we can make payments. And he said, well, not with me. And so we couldn't pay the anesthesiologist, so that was when I said, I better call Herb. I'm too emotionally attached in this situation. And I called him, and I worked on it, and he worked on it, and a few others, and it disappeared. I didn't know it then, but I know it now. Herb was climbing up into that invisible incorporeal eye and resting there. You don't have to direct it. You dismiss all that stuff. Stop that. Or just stop. All right? That's how sometimes you have to dismiss it that way. And then you stand still. And you climb up into this, or you're lifted up into the eye. And then the temple not made with hands is translated by the mind into form. And you see, ah, she's had a healing. Now, let me read you something from my journal here, briefly, and we'll be done. Well, this talk will be completed. In December of 1999, new wine into old wineskins cannot be done. New wine requires new wineskins. Yes, you cannot pull God, this invisible incorporeal being, into your human life. You can't do it. You can beg and plead and ask, and you won't receive, unless you ask aright. How do you ask aright? You dismiss the old wineskins. You stop trying to fix them. You come up into this eye of your being, and you rest there. You feel its glorious, wonderful presence, and you say, thank you. And you just sit. You're still. There's nothing to do. It's perfect, and you know it. And then that temple, not made with hands, is formed by the mind as a new wineskin. So, drop the desire to heal a disease. There is no personal self. God is all. The new wineskin needs no healing. Pour the new wine consciousness into the new wineskin, the new self. And then, about 13 days later, the kingdom of heaven is not a place, and this world is not a place. In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. This world equals mind, while the kingdom is consciousness now. And so you can see there, I was beginning to sense in 1999, there's a temple not made with hands. And when you're living in the temple made by hands, you have tribulation. But when you have overcome the world, you're living in consciousness, a temple not made with hands. And finally, in January 28th of 2000, and two shall be standing in a field, one shall remain. I am that one. Yes, two shall be standing in a field, and those two are one, a temple made by mind, by hands, and two, a temple made by I, by without hands. And I, that temple shall remain. So, do we see now? Very clearly, I hope. It's not about getting the evil and turning it into good. It's not even about being good. And it's not about being evil. It's about dismissing and dying to that. Well, he said it well. It's not about developing a person that doesn't have any problems. It's dying to the person that has them. We die to that. We dismiss it. First in our meditations. One by one by one, we dismiss it each time. We come within only for the purpose of being lifted into incorporeal spiritual eye and resting in it. And then every time we do, a little bit of this mental, this temple made by hands is dissolved. A little more is dissolved. A little more of the good drops away, the personal good. A little more of the personal evil drops away. And a little more of the invisible, incorporeal, impersonal I is formed, appears as form. And more we are dying to the temple made by hands so that we may live and move and have our being in and as I, that spiritual presence, that temple not made with hands. It's a whale of a journey. It's not for everyone. I would say it's not for the faint-hearted. Some of these spiritual experiences are, oh my God, or as they say on texting, OMG. But I would pick no other path. I cannot even imagine not being on this path. And thank you all for being here with me. You are evidence that the invisible spiritual eye, when it says, I will never leave thee, I am always with thee, you are evidence that that is true. And so thank you. Blessings.